This is Ryan.
Hey, and this is Wayne.
This is Kill the Rabbit Podcast, episode 500,000,000,000.
That many, huh?
Yes, that's what it feels like. Because we've been going for like 2 years, I believe.
That's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's most amazing because of consistency. I've never done anything that consistently in my entire life, not even college. So
you might say that that's one of the unexpected benefits of doing this, right?
Yes, they should have been reaped bountifully by now, which I think they have. This week, I think overall, over the last 2 years, things have actually moved, which is good. Now that I think about it, to be frank, and maybe it's just because most people don't let me into their life that intimately. I don't know a lot of people that are like, I'll go back. So like a thing of the, by the wayside nowadays seems like people don't have hobbies anymore. Like, you remember in your day, in my day, you were a whittler or you made birdhouses. Or you did some, or you're a bird watcher, you're some aficionado of some sort. I really feel like no one has hobby. I think everyone's hobby is watching Netflix, but that's not really a hobby.
No, and that's that would be an obvious place to look for spare time to have a hobby. But with people filling up their all the empty spaces in their lives with stuff that they do on their cell phones or their Netflix or Hulu or whatever else you're doing in the way of like video games and so forth. So then if you're complaining that you don't have enough time, then you probably need to kind of do a little time analysis of what you are doing with your time. And you may discover that, you know, I'm spending an awful lot of time on, you know, my phone or the TV or whatever. It's something else that comes to mind as you're saying that, though. I think a long time back here, when people, as you say, had hobbies, I think there was a more of a distinction between work and non-work time. Seems to be bleeding over a lot. I know back in the day when I first started working, and then I started working for IBM and company even was very supportive of, you know, this is your work time. Your free time is yours. They weren't so invasive today as a lot of companies are with your free time. Today it's almost like you're expected to work till they say don't work or till everything gets done. And sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you do, but not all the time.
Yeah, I feel like I think I have a very healthy understanding of boundaries for the most part. There are many people that I've worked with that do not like it's rare that I'll work until, you know, 8 o'clock, but I know a lot of people that just do it on the regular. And for them, it's like, by the same token, they would probably say that their job is their hobby. And it's just, there's a lot of other stuff out there. I think maybe it's that we're inundated with information and this is what people, like, now I have, like, I think I was telling you the other day, one of my to-dos is just to go in my backyard and sit on the porch with the dogs, mm-hmm. not do anything. You're so used to, like, how are you capitalizing your time? This is very prevalent within startup community. So, like, as an entrepreneur, everyone's trying to, like, squeeze every ounce of everything from time to creativity to money to how to 10x your life and or 1,000x your returns. It's just like, man, there comes a point. I mean, on one side, you have the data that's provided to you that can be beneficial. So like, for instance, I suck at running because it's not, so I do like sprint work when I'm running for my workout. So it's just like, you know, run or sprint and then walk or, you know, walk quickly. So I'm just mm-hmm. not very good at that. So then I was like, okay, then I'll really try to focus in on that and use data that I have to get better, because I have no idea what day is my best run. Well, I noticed that I feel like my worst day is Monday or Friday. And from, so I'll I track my times over a 2-week period. Monday and Friday are my best times. My worst times are Wednesday and Thursday. Those are the days I feel that I did great, and I did horrible, like a minute, 2 minutes longer than other runs. And I'm only running like a mile and a half. So looking at that and like having the data there and going over the data and then kind of reflecting on what my emotional state was is an interesting thing. I mean, I don't get crazy with it, but it's just enough to, it's really more for me to see it with my eyes and kind of be able to differentiate between how I feel about something and then how, what I know to be true and also what I know to be feasible. So like on weight loss, I know 2 to 3 pounds is reasonable a week going hard on the diet. I was thinking 4 pounds was minimal. That is not true. Like your weight fluctuates anywhere from 2 to 3 pounds a day, which I didn't realize. So like I had to start weighing in at a certain time every week and that's it. No other times, because you'll have fluctuations and at least you're consistent with that one point. So from watching these kinds of things over the 3 months that I've been on diet and exercise, it's been interesting to see the things that come out of that. Like the running, you know, one day you feel like you did extravagantly better than the day before. You only ran 10 seconds faster over a span of maybe 25 minutes. But your brain tricks you, because then, like I said, on Monday, I'm like, I did horribly. And it's like, that was your best time for the whole week. If you think about it logically, it makes sense, because you've had 2 days of recovery, but you've been eating trash, probably. So it's just interesting to, so I've started to apply that more of a scientific method to the madness that is my life, and I have started implementing how I time box things with personal projects, and I do it with work. So like, instead of having an open-ended 8 hours of gotta fix it, oh well, it didn't get fixed, or it did get fixed, or whatever, by time boxing it and say, okay, I'm going to spend 15 minutes and I'm going to go really hard on this, or 30 minutes, and then I'm going to take a break and do something else. It's very interesting when you demand those deliverables from yourself, what will happen, and how I see that I viewed my work before. Like I would view my job and my personal projects as completely different things. And if you look at them in a certain perspective, as far as like deliverables, they're not different. Like if you think like, I'll look at a problem at work and it's a problem, but it's not a huge problem. But if it's like, okay, let's play the devil's advocate. When you start your own company and you have a problem like this, oh, that's a big problem, because that's tied directly with money.
Yeah.
And because you kind of get spoiled with getting paid to do your job, and the company understands that you're not going to be able to fix everything all the time, that you're not fully, you don't have 100,000,000% vested interest because it's not directly tied to your paycheck. But when you start approaching your problems like that, it's much more fulfilling. And I notice that if I have an open-ended span of time that I have to do something and there's no structure to it, I don't get anything done and I cram at the very end, which I think is kind of the college term paper scenario where I didn't study, but the paper's due tomorrow. So you get a lot done in those 3 hours as you're cramming all night long. You know what I mean? So that's what I've started to notice with myself. This week has been not that great for accomplishing things of my little projects, just because I have some people on vacation. So I've had to handle the brunt of, I was working till 7 o'clock last night, but I felt very good and proud of myself that, you know, a team had been working on something for 6.5 hours and I was able to come in 30 minutes and be like, what about this? What about this? And that was actually the problem. So that felt real. It was validating that, like, okay, maybe I'm starting to get it now after a year. So,
you know, it's interesting to me as I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking about if anybody's you know, out there listening to this and they're thinking, boy, you guys just kind of get all over the map at times about stuff and more about just your day-to-day grind and different inconsistencies, as you've been mentioning. But you know, the truth of it is, a lot of times if somebody tunes into, like, say, a podcast on writing or building a robot or whatever, they're really looking for the 1, 2, 3 stuff. You know, hey, okay, so I want to get rich. Let's see what this guy has to say, how he's doing, and how is he, you know, targeting his market? How is he, you know, how is he disciplining himself to get a certain amount done every day? And all that has a certain level of value. But I think that there's a lot of cracks in or spaces in between those steps that people are looking for that they don't realize that those are the ones that they fall through and crater in. And some of them is, some of those cracks may be a lack of self-discipline. Some of them may be not realizing that, you know, you don't control every element of your day-to-day life. Things happen. Okay, so how do you embrace the things that happen because you can't ignore them and still stay on track with what you're attempting to do? And, you know, I think that's where a lot of people fail. I think expectations of, well, how, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to create this thing and I want to make so much money within a certain period of time. And you've never been there before, so you have no idea how long it's going to take or what you need to do. So there's these unrealistic expectations of the process from A to B. And sometimes, like something that we've brought up a number of times, and we talk about passion, we talk about doing things you love. You don't want to get involved in something where you don't have a passion for it, that you don't enjoy doing it, you're only doing it for the dollar sign, because you'll burn out quickly. And quite frankly, going back to what I was saying about the cracks, there's a whole lot of things that they're going to trip you up along the way, and you're going to lose it. You're not going to stay with it, because you really have to be in it for the long haul with anything that's worthwhile.
Well, and that's interesting you say that, because, like, even with, like, some of the back-end stuff that I'm dealing with now, is in the past, I've noticed that I would run into an issue and then I would sidestep it. And then I realized, like, well, I'm not really sidestepping it, because it depends on your direction. So in the beginning, when I would start a project, I loved planning for the project. I would write all kinds of things that I want to do with the project, or all the pie-in-the-sky stuff that I just dreamed up, because that's what one of the things that I'm good at is kind of able to bridge those technologies or disparate technologies together and come up with cool stuff. So I would love that. I'd write that all down. Like I said, the Realm stuff, like, I'm not joking, has 500 items in it, as far as to-do items, tasks, thoughts, ideas, modules, pieces, whatever. So I was like, okay, this is indicative of something going on. It's so unequally weighted or balanced in ideas that you're coming up with to do with some project and then doing it. So as I was working through this, and so now on the Google Cloud thing, I'm struggling with a stupid problem. I'm sure it's stupid. And that's all I'm doing. That's what I'm working on. And so in the past, I think that I would come against a problem and then I would just say, well, because I didn't address it. So I take that back. I wouldn't even come in contact with problems because I wasn't going in a direction. It was just in the ether. I didn't like the restrictions of, like, a timeline or, like, having to get something done in a certain amount of time or do step one first before step 20. I didn't like those confines. But you realize that without any type of direction or confines on that project, it's absolutely worthless what you're doing, because anybody can have ideas. It's doing them that's the problem, and you're getting into the nitty-gritty of it and having an issue with stupid, I'll give you an example. A stupid thing with rerouting a backend page to log in, right? You have an unauthenticated user. Mm. So on the backend, I have like this REST API that like serves out stuff for Qbots. Well, you don't want anyone online getting access to that. So you're just like, okay, well, I have to lock it down and enable like what's called like JWT authentication through tokenization. It gives, what that is like, I give you, you send me some data, right? I check it and I say, okay, you're able to talk to me. So we do a handshake. This is very paraphrased. We do a handshake. Like literally once I get to know you, like I can't walk up to a random person and say, where do you work? It's off-putting, right? You don't know them. But if you walk up to a person and say, hi, my name's Wayne, where do you work? That's appropriate. Would you agree?
Mm, yeah.
So the same thing happens in computers. They do a handshake first to be like, who are you? I know you now. You're trusted. So now you can ask things of the server. Well, it's not rerouting to the login page. And that is an embarrassing problem because it's so basic and so stupid. But it's always the basic, stupid things. The problem at work yesterday that everyone struggled with for hours, that I just so happened to know because it's kind of where I work in, that's why they called me, was stupid, right? It's never something, it's never the amazing, it's never the engineer's dream of some elaborate, complex solution. It's always something dumb, right? You didn't plug it in. So I'm learning to kind of really double down and focus on those problems as I'm going in the direction of my project. And I notice that I get better at it and I get better at, like I learned something in my front end stuff that clicked something for me at work. I was like, that's why that doesn't work because of this. I never knew that before. So it's like only in delving into those small, significant, insignificant, stupid problems, is, or so you think, that you can, go forward, and you get satisfaction out of fixing it.
Yeah, you know, you notice what something comes to mind as you're talking about this, that it's really easy for a group of people who are trying to solve a problem to remain at a certain level of complexity as they're looking for solutions, not realizing that you know, some of the ABCs of troubleshooting say just start from the most obvious potential solution and then work to the complex. And you know, they forgot that because they're all fishing deep, somebody needs to go into the shallow end of the water and double check to make sure it's plugged in, and that you know, there's you know, just the basic stuff, because the solution may be far simpler. It's just that all of you guys are thinking that it's a complex thing, or that another problem is, I've seen this problem before, I know what the solution is. Oh, really? There's no other potential solutions to this other than the one that you ran across one day many years ago? You know, you just don't know. So, anyway.
Even so much of my job now is delving into things that I have no clue what I'm doing. So it's like, that's what you're doing. I mean, that is the life of an entrepreneur. The funny thing that you were saying about podcasts, this is really... I probably shouldn't even say this, but I don't really even listen to podcasts anymore about entrepreneurship. Most of them I find worthless. It's either, oh, I'm an investor, I'm talking about my investments, look how amazingly smart I am. And it's like, dude, anybody can have $1 million and hit at a roulette table, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you lucked out, like some of the investors at Uber, right? They had an Uber on paper, as you're looking at as an investor, before Uber existed. It sounds like a really stupid idea and very, very hard and requires way too much capital to get off the ground. But if you hit it, if you were an early investor at Uber, they're what's called a, I think they call them decacorns now, which is like multi-billion dollar startups. They had a return on their investment of 1,000x, right? So if you invested $1 in Uber your return was $1,000. That's insanity. Good returns are like 25% more than you invested. Not even, or maybe two times what you invested. Is a good investment. Is a really good investment, actually. So, in all these podcasts that I'm listening to, there's just a bunch of arrogant guys who are the investors. They don't know diddly squat about the technology anyway. They learn the lingo and they know what to say to make themselves sound smart. Like one of the guys was like, "Well, I just really want a watch that can like make cell phone calls. I'd buy that. I'd invest in that." I'm like, dude, do you even understand the complexity of building something like that? That the battery doesn't run out in 2 hours? Like, think about what you're talking about before you just spout it off as like I said, it's very easy to conceptualize what a time machine is. Building it is a different situation. So yeah. I feel that people's feelings about themselves as far as how smart they are is misappropriated in a lot of these mediums that we're seeing, like investors, right? Investors are just people with money that, yeah, they're smart enough. Let's be honest, they pay tech teams to go and vet stuff before they invest in it. Then you have entrepreneurs that are out there that saying, I want to invent something. Like, I want to do Cosmologic. I'm not out there drumming up capital. I don't need it. Like, just build the prototype. And if that works, you build your business just like the normal way. Everyone is of this mindset that going through the hard times and solving the dumb redirect login page, which is very, very embarrassing for like the level of engineer that I am. But it's the truth. It doesn't mean I'm stuck on the problem for more than 5 minutes, but it's still something that comes up. You're like, oh, I didn't think about that. So what your understanding of how you're to be successful is, I think, is very, very misguided. I think that they think that, or what they're spouting off in these podcasts is that it's very simple. You just get investment and your idea becomes, it's fleshed out, and then you get $1 billion and you sell to Google and you're rich. And it's like, that's just not the truth. And so I kind of have stepped back. I realized that I was listening to so many podcasts because I was trying to validate myself. I've become successful by learning to ask the right questions to the right people, to learn myself so I don't have to reinvent the wheel. So it's a coupling of me asking the right questions to the right engineers to illuminate myself and the hard work to get down to the nitty gritty and build stuff that's never been done before. Those combined together, you'll become success, right? You can
And when you define success, to me, what I think has been really important for you, although you've veered from this at times, getting your eyes off the I want to be a millionaire to I really would like to create something that I could be proud of, that I would learn a lot from, because I love to learn, which you've always loved to learn. So you're creating something of quality. Yes, if it's real quality, it's going to have value. And the byproduct of that will be a certain degree of wealth. But if that becomes a goal, it's almost like people are saying, if I had all this money, then, you know, the common phrase, I'll be happy because I'll have all this money.
Yeah.
And really? Aren't you going to be looking for another challenge in order to create something else that you can be proud of? I mean, if you look at the old days of the inventors, they weren't making, if you look back at some of the great inventors of our time, not our time, but previous times, they didn't make a whole lot of money on those inventions. But were they doing it for the money? Maybe to some degree, but their names go down in the history books for having created some incredible things. And I think that's where the accolades need to come from. I mean, yes, certainly we need money to live and all that, but it should never be the goal.
You know, like Da Vinci created the helicopter far before we even had technology to accomplish it. But he would probably state it was worth it, even though I didn't get $1 billion, which he would have. And so I've gotten, and where I'm going with that is, I've kind of veered in this direction where previously in my career, I was very, unsure of myself. So I want to ask all these questions of other engineers so that I can know, because it's like, I can't possibly have a unique thought myself, which is not true. So now later in life, as I've recentered and pruned off unneeded weight, I've learned to be more confident in yourself. You're out there looking for the answer when it sounds cliche, but the answer is kind of within yourself. As far as it still boils down to the common facts of, it's going to take time to learn stuff. It's going to take time to build stuff. You're going to run into problems. It's really, the problems are going to come. It's just the question of what you're going to do with them. So
right.
If I'm going through and I'm facing another issue, it's not a, oh man, I can't believe this. Why didn't everything work out smoothly like I thought it should? I go into it with the mindset that it's going to be hard and you're going to have to churn it out. Like, I mean, I've been doing personal project stuff for like 2-3 years. I could look at that and be discouraged and be like, you know, Technophobic didn't take long at all to just run into a company. Part of that is because you're young and stupid and you're not really understanding. You think you have this idea in your mind when you start your first company that you're just going to like release your website and then just money, just people will find you and you'll just be rich beyond your wildest imagination, which is typically not what happens. So I've kind of veered in a different direction from not depending as much on podcasts that, let's be honest, they're just there to kind of make me feel good about myself or validate my direction. When, in all honesty, with some of the directions that you're going with the potential company in the future are not directions anyone's going in. So you will be alone, right? You'll be the trailblazer. No one else will understand what you're doing. No one else will get it, but eventually they will. And that's what matters.
Plenty of people out there piggybacking off other people's ideas.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we have a mass issue with the future of, this is just from me perusing and reading, and I'll take a firm stance on it because it's my show and I don't care. engineering in the future is very high risk of falling apart. We don't have engineers like Da Vinci anymore. We have, I wouldn't even venture to call them like inventors. I would venture to call them graduates of trade schools or courses or boot camps that they code around stuff, but it's not, if you would ask anyone like, what's your passion? What are you doing? What's your invention? There's none of that. It's my goal is to work for Google. And I think that's very sad. And I feel that in the future, we're going to have, this is going to be more and more of a problem because of the internet, because of instantaneous gratification. Every time someone encounters an issue, they think they're inadequate or they think something is wrong with what they're doing. And I can't tell you how many engineers, especially junior engineers, that I've told, hey, man, this is okay. Like, they'll come to me and be like, I can't believe this. It got screwed up. I even had one guy that was like, I don't want to show you my code. It's not done yet. I'm like, oh, dude, like, you need to get over yourself a little bit. It's going to be hard. You're going to have those issues. It's better for us to look at them together because the issues are the only reason that I've become successful. If everything worked as soon as I wrote it out in code, I would have not been successful because it would have become boring. But I think that the future of engineering is, it's very probable that we're going to have significant issues. Because think about it. Everybody wants to do, most people that are younger, right? If you have an hour of time, what happens?
Netflix. I'm doing my video games.
The internet. Yeah, playing video games. Even perusing the internet. Not even reading a concise stream of thought. It's just ramblings that you find online from people that are just like not contributing. It's just a bunch of noise. So, and that's what, like, I was like, I'm going through this MIT class on signals and I didn't understand that. This is really funny. So I reached out to an electrical engineer in the family who's in another country. And so her major is more of a robotics major. So I was like, dude, I'm having this problem with what's called combinators. And because I'm thinking of it in a very complex way, right? But mathematically, from the algebra side, it's not complex. So I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing? What's wrong? And so the whole issue was, you had terms like X, Y, and Z. And then just to give you a very, very simplistic way of looking at it, like you would say, like, Y would equal X plus Y. And Z equals X plus Y. Effectively, what I missed in looking at and having tunnel vision of thinking that there's a massive level of complexity, because my assumption is I don't know what I'm doing, right? My assumption is I don't know what I'm doing. I'm in electrical engineering class. I don't belong here. I'm not smart enough. It's from MIT. Their level is so far beyond me. I got crippled. And the idea was, so Y equals X plus Y, or my bad, that was a bad example. Z equals X plus Y, and then A would equal Z plus X. So all you do is take Z equaling X plus Y, and you would have A equals X plus Y. So A would equal 2X plus Y. Very simple algebraically. I failed to do that. It's just multiplying out the terms. And I was like, I felt so stupid, but it's like, isn't that interesting? So I just sat in that feeling. Most of your life, a lot of problems in your life, they will make you feel stupid because it's so obvious, but it's not obvious when you're first looking at it, right? And you're accounting for all of your issues of self-doubt and like what we call it in engineering community is imposter syndrome. That someone's going to find you out. They're going to find out you're really not that smart. You really don't know what you're doing. When the more I talk to seasoned people that are in the industry, the more I realize that they tell me, dude, I don't know what I'm doing with this. And that's a very healthy response. Whereas when it before in my life, I was very frustrated and I would, I'm a failure. I can't believe it. But for me, I look at this equation and it's laughable, but it's just like, huh, you got caught up in your perceived technology, even she was like, I was trying to approach it like an integration calculation. And then she was like, wait a minute, maybe it's just like terms. And that's what it ended up being. But like I said, I think that if you listen to the podcast, it's us rambling on about day-to-day life. But I mean, that's kind of where the meat of it is anyway. It's not when I have an announcement that I made $1 million in my company. No one cares about that if they don't have any frame of reference to know actually how I did it.
Right. And going back to what I was saying earlier, that a lot of people that are looking to start up something or make a bunch of money, they're really looking for the 3 steps, the 10 steps, whatever. If I do this, just like I'm, taking instructions from a toy that I bought that's got 10 steps, I'm just put this together and then that together and, step number 10, voila, it's all done. And life is not like that. More complex than things aren't like that. You're going to run into problems. You really do need to have a mindset of expectation that there's going to be the need for stopping and thinking. If you're having problems with focus, you really need to work on that because you're going to get to a point where you don't understand. But then I think one of the greatest things, and you're bringing that up now, is the willingness to ask someone. Yeah. Because it may be a blind spot of yours. You may feel stupid after they tell you, but it was still a blind spot. And, the whole concept of mentoring is beginning to become more and more of a thing today. Back in the old days, it really was a thing. If you want to learn a trade or a skill, you had to, your best bet was to, apprentice yourself to somebody who really knows what they're doing and learn the trade. Today, you can have a lot of mentors because of the access to the internet. There's a lot of people that know things, and you just have to have the humility to be able to ask those questions and reveal your ignorance. And ignorance is not a sin, it's okay.
In the beginning of, like we've talked about this as of late, whereas in my past I would ask everyone what they thought, right? I was very, I don't know if it's wise or it's wisdom, but also it's being unsure of yourself that will also occur, right? Like, what do you think? You think we should? Okay, we should do that. And now I'm getting more confident to be like, no, we shouldn't do that. That's dumb. I'm not going to tell you it's dumb, but I'm going to try to guide us in a different direction. And I'm trying to become more confident with myself. Like, I'm working on this robotics project, just tinkering and trying to become more aware. It's one of my things that I do. So like you were saying with life, like not all the pieces are included. So this was like, you need this much resistance going to this piece of whatever. So I didn't have, you know, this 500 or 600 ohm resistor. I only had 220s, 220. So I was like, okay, normally it's this day and age is, well, order the 500 ohm one. But if you understand electronics theory, then you understand you can have two resistors in series and they'll effectively add to each other. So just by streaming in two 220s, I have 440, knowing that the difference of 60 ohms isn't going to burn anything out. And that worked. So like becoming more accustomed to when you Google something and it only has one or two pages on it, it may be that time to, you know, get on my big whiteboard and try to work it out, try to think outside the box. And that's really where you're going to strive, or you're going to thrive rather. At least I do, like figuring something else out on my own without help from outside, or just cluttering your mind with all the opinions of everybody else. It's nice to have that clarity to say, this is what I think it is. And if I fall on my face, it's fine. I'll learn from it. And just, I feel that I'm blessed to have grown up in the beginning of the internet. Whereas if I was born in this era, it would be more difficult, I think, because you kind of have to abstain yourself from the internet so you can allow your mind to actually learn things as it's designed to. If that makes sense.
Well, and I was just thinking of how many people give answers that they heard from someone else, but they never really themselves thought through why does that work, because they don't understand the way that particular component works, but they ask somebody a question or they found an answer in the book. Well, you use this because when in this kind of scenario, you use this particular electrical device, whatever. And so that's my answer. But if you ask them why is that the correct one? Do you understand how it works? That's a lot of waste of time for some people to do, because they're thinking, well, yeah, but I've got the answer here. No. If you learn why things are the answer, how they work, you'll eventually be able to develop your own thinking about it and be able to go beyond those who are just parroting what someone else has said, you know?
So that's kind of how... That's where it I did pretty horrible with all my things this week, but like I'm doing yesterday's stuff that I had on my agenda kind of today, but in an easy fashion, because remembering that I'm doing it for fun. So then I guess for next week, you know, try to get more things done. My people will be back from vacation so that I won't be as crazy, or shouldn't be. But yeah, like I said, I wouldn't feel bad about the podcast kind of migrating into just talking about how it's been doing this week. I think those little lessons are kind of more important.
Right. And it's, I think it's more valuable to present a realistic picture of what does it look like? I think people have gotten more used to reality TV. So they're watching things and some of them are kind of like watching paint dry. But the fact of the matter is, a lot of things, they just take time. And, you know, you start mixing in things like some of your weaknesses, you know, like we talked about inconsistency and all that kind of stuff. You've got to work with that, you know, and figure out so how are you going to become more consistent? You suck at making goals. How are you going to get better at goal setting? Because quite frankly, this is not a short journey. If it was a really short journey, then everybody would be doing it and it wouldn't have very much value for the general population. So,
even like on the working out stuff, I'm looking at the guys that are like completely ripped out, and now you have much more appreciation for it. Takes a long time. I mean, it takes a year, maybe two, to just really, and that's going really hard on diet and really hard on working out. But I mean, the cool thing is when I was working out yesterday, I was doing some type of like pull or something, a bent row. And I was like, wow, I've almost like doubled my weight on it and not realizing. Yes, it takes time, but you do have those gains and just kind of focus on those, keep you going. Mm-hmm. But yep. And now you'll be working from home, so that will
that's going to be interesting. I've never really worked from home before, and there's, as I've told you offline here, it's going to be some interesting stuff because I've been working in an office alongside a lot of people who would probably love to work from home too, but due to the nature of their jobs, some of them really couldn't work from home. So there's a jealousy factor. There's the big one that my boss has concern is communication with people, because you'll have to let people not only know that you're working from home, but be probably overly willing and able to accommodate people where they used to just drop by your desk and ask you stuff or drop things on your desk and want to talk about them. You're going to have to be overly accommodating so that you can calm their fears that, oh no, how's this going to work? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I mean, you're really good at communication. So I don't think that's, I think other people that it's harder for them. I think that would be a different story, but you're very good at.
Well, like yesterday when I came home from work, cause I took a half day where I was just going to work at home but nobody knew that. And I was the only designer in the office. Okay. So when I got home, one of the first things I did was send out a message to all the affected parties. Hey, guys, I'm still working. I'm just working at home. If you need to get a hold of me, email, here's my cell phone number. Help you in any way I can. So, okay, calm those fears. So I've got...
Are you going to let this go on for a few weeks and then email them once a week? Be like, oh, working from home again this week.
Well,
actually, I'm permanently working from home.
I don't know that I feel right about saying that I'm permanently working from home, because I think that would kind of, there would be this shell shock look on some people's faces. I'm thinking about just saying I'm working from home this week. Speaking of this coming week, I'm just going to work from home, guys. And then if you've got any problems with this, call me again, let them know, be a little proactive and maybe contact them about projects that I'm working jointly with them on and asking them questions, just so that I stimulate that conversation, that communication. Mm-hmm. And rather than saying forever and ever, I'm working from home now, so see ya.
Yes. Contact me ever again.
That's just the perception of it. Nobody's sitting back and thinking how that's going to affect them. They're just thinking, this is way too new for me. I don't like the idea of you working from home because it's, I'm not sure, I can't put it into words, but somehow this is going to adversely affect me and I'm going to hate it. And they really just kind of have to get used to you being in that mode. Because, I mean, I can always come in for meetings. I can always come in and pick up, you know, sketches and drawings and stuff that they need to give to me.
I think they'll like it more eventually because you'll be more focused. Like you can give their, you know, without distractions.
Yeah, so anyway, it's going to be a transition that's going to be interesting.
About something. Someone's going to have a problem with something. And anyway. I think that's the way it goes. But you've worked there for long enough that you've paid your dues, so it's like,
right. So this week will be interesting, and I'll be able to focus on more than just work because I'm getting more sleep instead of getting up so early.
Anyway. Yeah, that'll be awesome. You'll like it. You'll like it. I love it. Yeah. I wouldn't do it any other way.
Well, this has been good, guy.
Yeah, it's been really fun. So then we'll do it again next week?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
We'll see you later, buddy.